We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Good morning / afternoon, everyone. We are here for a Perpetual Chess and Power Play Chess collaboration. Regular Perpetual Chess listeners know I'm a huge fan of Grandmaster Daniel King, who is a top commentator, author, Chessable author. We've seen the players using his stuff in this tournament, as we will discuss. But without further ado, let's welcome Daniel King to his channel. Welcome, Daniel.
Hi, Ben. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, so it's been, at least from my perspective, quite an exciting tournament. Have you enjoyed it, Daniel?
Very much. I always love the candidates tournaments. And I think this particular format, the 8-player double round format, as it's been going since, I don't know, 2013, I think it is. I absolutely love it. For me, it's, you know, one of the highlights in the chess calendar, because we always seem to have an absolutely wonderful event. I mean, so much drama. People absolutely are trying to bring their A game, or most of them are trying to bring their A game. We can talk about that in a moment to the tournament. And there is something really big at stake. And that's why I think it produces such drama. So, yeah, in short, I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, likewise. I do think it's the stakes that must make it so compelling, because I've talked in the past with people like Christoph Zalecki. He complains about the double round robin format. People like MVL have complained that, like, in the late rounds, you can have games where some people have no reason to care and the other people, it's the biggest game of their career. And that's not the ideal way to set up a sporting event. But nonetheless, as the drama unfolds round by round, I find myself absolutely captivated. And this candidate's in particular, if anything, more than usual.
There are pros and cons to every single system that you would care to devise.
Right.
And for me, as we've seen over the past few candidates in the past 10 years, it works. You know, I'm not going to whinge about it at all.
Yeah, I've been pretty entertained as well. And welcome to people in chat. Feel free to drop questions. So basically my plan for this this discussion is we'll do a little bit of big picture and then we'll just take it player by player. But if you have questions about specific players or something else, feel free to drop it in and we will try to catch it. But before we do get to the individual players, one more question, Daniel, which is what has been the biggest surprise for you so far in the chess?
Well, you know, we're going to go into detail into this in a second, but right. I think the showing of Pragnananda and Gukesh.
Mm-hmm.
We know how talented they are, but my feeling before the tournament was this 2024, it's maybe come a bit too soon for them.
Right.
But they are right at the top of the tournament. And it doesn't surprise me that they've had kind of, you know, I thought they would have, you know, one or two really great games and perhaps produce some upsets. But the fact that they're right there, okay, for me, that's the biggest surprise.
Yeah, and as you say, as we discuss them individually, we can get into more detail. But yeah, they're both showcasing a fearless style. You know, you wondered going in with this being their first candidates, would they be trying to get their feet wet, maybe not play, you know, to win the tournament? I know in some of your previews, you highlighted this tendency with Prague in particular, who can be, you know, he's grown to be more solid over the years, whereas Gukesh was known to be somewhat volatile. But I mean, they both just shown a fearlessness and a form that I didn't necessarily expect. But for me, I was going to say the biggest surprise, by the way, of course, if Faruja had lost yesterday's game, I would have said the biggest surprise was Faruja's self-immolation. But since it hasn't happened yet, we can put that conversation line on hold. Although, as we will get to, Daniel, I'm not ready to rule it out entirely for the second half of the tournament.
I agree. You know, the fact that he won yesterday was kind of extraordinary. And he could well have just gone down in flames again.
Yeah.
So actually, I think, even though he won, I think he's still on tilt, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. So, all right, we'll save that for when we get to him.
Yeah.
Let's go player by player. And I think we should not, you know, not build suspense. I think we should just go from the top down. So
yes.
Let's start with your impressions of Jan Nepomniachtchi, who, of course, is in the lead with 4.5 points.
Okay. So starting from the top. Okay. Well, he was basically, I picked two favorites before the event because, hey, I make the rules. So I picked Jan Nepomniachtchi and I picked Fabiano Caruana as my kind of joint favorites. And Nepo is absolutely fulfilling as. I don't know if I expected somehow, actually. He's incredibly professional. He's won the candidates twice before, and he understands exactly what is required in these tournaments. You know, he's not doing a, you know, Firuz Jar. That would be his alter ego.
Right, exactly.
Ali Reza going wham, wham, wham all over the place. You know, really professional, conserving energy, picking off the points when he can, ducking back inside, putting up his forward defensive and taking the blows and then coming back again. And he's just so measured. And OK, so he's on plus two. It is plus two, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah,
I guess it is. Yeah.
Four and a half.
And I mean, generally, to win this tournament, the candidates, you need plus three or plus four. Now, he's already on plus two.
Right.
And he's just playing super solid. I mean, I could go just very quickly through his games. I'm not going to go into huge detail, of course, but let's just go from, let me see. What was his first round game? Okay, first round. So he played against Abasov, and okay, Abasov really didn't want to play much chess, and they reached the drawn end game. But okay, you know, people were saying, "Oh, well, not such a great result for Nepo." You know, drawing against the weakest player, but it's like water off a duck's back. Okay, in the next round, so he played against Ali Reza, and his preparation Nepo's preparation is absolutely superb. You know, he obviously caught Firouz Jah in this line of the Spanish, and it was quite clear that Nepo knew it extremely well. I mean, maybe Firouz Jah was kind of aware of what was going on roughly, but Nepo really understood this position, and I think it played into his hands. A slightly unusual position, but Nepo has such a good grasp of these kind of dynamic positions. And actually, it was quite funny when I saw Nepo wandering his king across the board. It actually reminded me of the King's Gambit. And Nepo is a real, as we know, he loves playing the King's Gambit in blitz and rapid events. And one of the features of the King's Gambit is that very often your king goes for a big walk. And, you know, Nepo is just not fazed by these positions at all. And I think outplayed Ali Reza beautifully in this game. So yeah, he basically picked off Ali Reza really well in that game. And then, you know, solid draws. And then he picked off Vidic in round four in another fantastic bit of preparation featuring this move, knight h2. A new idea
Oh yeah, that was nice.
in the Berlin endgame. And not it's real well, I find this really interesting that for me, this is superb preparation and superb use of engines. Because if you look at this line, you know, the engine will say, well, this is nothing special for white. But for a human, this is really difficult for black to meet because white has such a straightforward plan of basically trying to drive the kingside pawns forward, you know, execute the kingside pawn majority. For black, it's not so easy. And so even way down into the position, Nepo had some kind of understanding of what was going on. But for Vidit, really, really difficult. The engine still thought it was equal right till fairly near the end, actually, or tenable. So I thought this was kind of masterful preparation and also just showed how professional Nepo is in his approach.
Yeah, and just the power of new ideas, like with when Prague caught Nepo in the Petrov. It's not necessarily that it has to be this, you know, the era where you could find a new move that actually wins is over. So it's more about unexplored terrain where you have the advantage of having played 20 training games and, you know, drilled it to death, and your opponent had no idea it was coming.
Exactly. And actually, you mentioned that Petrov Prague against Nepo. So Nepo is kind of staying true to himself and using the Petrov, which he's done over the last few years very successfully. Okay, he had a bit of a hiccup in the World Championship match, but okay, it's Magnus, whatever. But I thought this was really interesting because the boot was on the other foot. Prague absolutely went for him. But Nepo didn't panic. He managed to put up some kind of defense. Now, there was a kind of fantastic win that maybe Prague could have had. But actually, I thought Nepo defended extremely pragmatically, got to a position where he's slightly worse in an endgame, but basically held it in a very solid way. So
Yeah,
I
although I
thought
could do a
that.
whole podcast about what led Prague to trade queens in that position. I was
Well,
really
okay,
surprised.
absolutely. But, you know, people were saying, I mean, I know on my channel when I, you know, posted this video and people were saying, oh, you know, Prague, how did he miss that win with Queen E5?
Yeah,
Let
that's
me
not
tell you,
fair. Yeah.
absolutely. You know, this is so difficult. I mean, these beautiful variations, I absolutely love this variation where the bishop slides back to b1 and then the queen goes to b2 and then they hit the king and
Yeah.
the queen on these two diagonals. I mean, this is like for every you know e4 player, this is the classic attacking method. And so I have to say, this was a joy to play through these lines and to analyze these games. You know, I absolutely loved it. very difficult to spot at the board. So actually, yes, great preparation from Prague. But in some ways, I was also really impressed with Nepo, that he rode through a really tough position and came out the other side and drew it. So, you know, I'm really impressed by him. And yeah. By the way, Ben, what's your take on Nepo playing white against Caruana and basically heading for a draw? What did you feel about that?
I mean, he's a practical player. You kind of have to trust his judgment at this point. He wins every candidate, you know? So who am I to argue with him? But yeah, I mean, you never know what a player's energy level is. So I can't judge him.
Honestly, I just thought that is really cool. As I said, to win this tournament, you probably need maybe plus three, maybe plus four. And he's just thinking, okay, why on earth should I sweat trying to break down Fabiano Caruana, the strongest player in the tournament? Why not just, you know, play solidly, have a free day and move on? Great. I mean, I just think he's being really pragmatic and he trusts that he's going to be okay in his other games. So yeah. I thought very well done from Nepo. Just a little reminder to everyone. I can't even find that game now against Caruana. Oh, well, never mind.
Okay. Well, I've got a few more things on Nepo. Obviously, we'll have to speed up as we get to some other players.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Him being the leader is particularly fascinating. Did want to throw in, I haven't seen Chess by the Numbers model yet, but I saw Pawnalyze on Twitter where they update their rating models based on results to get the rough probability. And Nepo's now at around 40% to win the tournament. Obviously he was about 20 going in, so it helps to have more points. But I wanted to ask you about something I read in Dennis Monacrucis, the Chess Minds blog, where he wrote last night about Nepo. He writes, and this is a quote, "As in round five in the Prague Nepo game, Nepo and his Petrov were too much of a stationary target. The Petrov is a first-class opening, but if you give world-class players months to prepare for it, there are going to be some nasty surprises coming your way. In both cases against Prague and against Nakamura, it was clear that Nepo had prepared for those surprises, but the problem is that there are so many potential surprises and not enough time in the day to rehearse one's prep for every single one of them, that at some point the surprisee is going to be on his own before the surpriser is, regardless of what is in the surprisee's computer files."
Nicely put.
Yeah.
So nicely expressed.
So do you think that this is an issue? Like he's just going to keep playing the Petrov and they're just going to keep finding the most obscure, as Hikaru put it, memory test?
Yeah. There are basically two approaches you can take in top-level chess. You can play one or maybe two openings and say, right, this is going to be my opening. Like Nepo has decided, clearly, I'm okay with the Petrov, and I'm going to play this, and I know it's sound. I've prepared unbelievably well for the two World Championship matches, and I'm confident that this is going to be okay. And you stick with it and you work like crazy. And because you've worked for the past, I don't know, 4 years on an opening,
right,
you basically think, whatever people are going to throw at me, it can't be that bad. And I'm going to know it better than my opponent. Or you can take the other view, let's say like Pragnananda, who's basically a moving target. So that's the other approach in top level chess. It wouldn't surprise me if we see Nepo switch to another opening, maybe a Spanish, some kind of Spanish variation in subsequent rounds or something else. But, well, I think so far his tactics have worked out well. Against Naka, I'm probably going to get slayed for this, but I thought Naka's opening preparation was superficial.
You hinted at that in your video recap last night. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a bit more than a hint, actually. I really thought it was superficial. As Hikaru himself said in the post-game interview, it was kind of a memory test. And Nepo was basically on top of it. And it wasn't you know, I think for a player of his caliber, it wasn't that difficult to meet what Nakamura had prepared. And basically, this game didn't last very long. You know,
and Naka was briefly almost in trouble.
Absolutely.
But you know, if he had played A4 earlier in that game, not to go into too many details, but he did have a decent push at one point if he had followed through correctly. It's
Well, maybe. I'm not. Let's just get that game on the board. I haven't got any analysis here.
While you're doing that, Michael with some good insights saying, I just can't believe he refuted both Prague and Naka in real time when they had such promising positions due to the opening. There's something special about his defensive skills. And Michael, to get to your question earlier about what is the it factor for Nepo that makes him always win and lead the candidates. And as Daniel was saying, I do think it's his pragmatism. Anyway, go on, Daniel.
I'm just putting that game on the board. Yeah, as you say, Nakamura actually could have got into trouble. You're saying that perhaps
it was earlier. It was a handful of moves before this.
Quite possible that he could have put a bit more pressure on. However, I think in these kind of positions, there's kind of engine advantage and human advantage, and I don't believe they're the same thing. And I think it in a position as random as this, as wild as this, it's unpredictable. I think this whole variation is quite tough for White. You can see that White's king is insecure. This is the basic problem. And I think you have to note this one absolutely backwards. And basically, Hikaru didn't. Yeah. He didn't know this position backwards. And as you say, he could have got into massive trouble. So, as people are saying, I think Nepo's defensive skills absolutely superb, but kind of this is his sort of position. He likes the initiative.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't miss that bishop takes g3 shot. We had one question on Twitter from Camelia Gomez asking, if you were Nepo, would the past games with Prague and Naka give you confidence in your play or form, or would you feel more discouraged given that you've been caught a little bit in these openings?
I think I'd be reasonably confident following.
Yeah, I would feel invincible if I was Nepo, by the record. just amazing. All right, we should probably reluctantly
move on, shouldn't we? Yeah.
It is fascinating, though. Yeah. So let's go to Fabiano next. I feel like he's had a very quiet tournament.
Yeah, sorry. Before we move, just one more thing about Nepo.
Sure.
I thought it was really interesting that he has hired Jan Gustafsson.
Yeah.
As one of his seconds. Because Jan obviously has this incredible track record with seconding Magnus, one of the seconds for Magnus. You know, Jan has been there and done that in the World Championship. Incredibly experienced. And I think that does add something to his team. Now, he's obviously got, you know, unbelievable Russian support and no doubt, you know, teams of people working for him, but I think Jan definitely adds something.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I was definitely, as I mentioned on my last pod, when he unveiled that knight h2 idea, I'm giving Jan credit until told not to. Let's move on to Fabiano. We will talk Fabiano and the rest of the players after the break.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win?
Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, I think Fabiano would be a little bit disappointed with what he's got so far, because I think it kind of started with game one, actually. You know, Fabiano in that first game against Hikaru had a really good opportunity to put this one away. I mean, you could say this is very clever practical play from Nakamura with this counterattack. However, Fabiano was still doing really well here. And, you know, maybe it's kind of that first round feeling where you're kind of going, oh, I don't want to risk too much. But I think on another day, he'd have put this game away. And I think having started off like that, you know, he suffered a little bit. He had a poor position against Vidit in the Rossolimo. That wasn't great. But, I mean, Vidit missed a win there. He was worse against Firuz Jah as well. He was pressing against Gukesh, but couldn't convert that one. Yeah, I think he'll be frustrated, actually. However, having said that, he's on plus one. He's only a half a point behind Nepo. So, you know, he's still got it all to play for. I just hope that he can kind of get his mind in gear, because I think, you know, really that's the only thing that will be holding him back, actually.
Yeah. I mean, to be playing sort of your B game and to be half a point back is not bad. Fabiano
exactly.
Was quoted in Anthony Levin's chess.com recap saying, comparing this candidate to 2 years ago, he said, I was plus three then, Jan was plus four. The emotions were somewhat different, and now there's a few more players in the race, I think. 2 years ago, clearly Jan was leading from start to finish, and this time it's wide open. So that suggests fairly optimistic viewpoint. As I mentioned in the pod I recorded last night, I do feel like it's wide open, but what concerns me as someone who just wants entertainment is that Jan has white against Abasov in the next round. And if he can bring that one home, it might not be so wide open anymore.
There you go. That's his plus three.
Yeah.
If Jan wins that one. No, that's really, yeah, that's very interesting. So, yeah, a little bit disappointing from Fabiano, but all to play for. I mean, I think it's quite telling that, you know, he had this game against Pragnananda last night where, let me see, let's get that on the board.
The French, who would have guessed?
The French, wow, yeah. I know, incredible. And it's like Fabiano was sort of taken aback a little bit by this opening. And, I mean, here, if I were white, okay, I might not think I've got the advantage, but I would think, okay, this is sort of an interesting position. And, well, you know, I'm better than my opponent. This is sort of fertile territory to play for a win, to create something here. But actually, I would say that Prague kind of outplayed him from this moment. You know, we went on, and once we get to the position around here, basically, Black has a slight initiative in this position. Now, Fabiano held it with ease. But the fact that, you know, out of this opening, Fabiano got absolutely nothing, I thought was quite telling. And I think, you know, a player like Prag, who's sort of shaking him up with some slightly unusual opening, and yet he can't deal with it, can't get sort of winning chances against it. I think it says a lot, actually. You know, it's the new generation. Maybe he's struggling with that, actually.
Yeah, and of course he's got Nakamura next with black, so that'll be tough game to win. So we will see. But I mean,
Well,
again,
and
if you had, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, you mentioned black against Nakamura. Well, you know, if you think back to the FIDE Grand Swiss in the autumn,
Yeah,
where
Beijing.
Hikaru beat him beautifully with white,
Yeah.
and actually a very clever opening choice from Hikaru, who basically he did one of those openings that basically you either win with white or it's a draw. Again, a typical Hikaru choice. You know, that game could have fizzled out to a draw in 25 moves. But no, Fabiano got it slightly wrong and suddenly he's under the cosh.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
yeah, let's see. It's going to be tough.
We shall see. But if you had told him going in, you're going to be half a point back at the halfway point. I don't think it's kind of like the modal outcome for him. So, not a disaster. All
Not a
right.
disaster by any means, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk Gukesh. Fascinating tournament so far.
Wow. I wouldn't say a revelation,
It was
but
almost a revelation. If he had won yesterday, our tone would be very different.
yeah, but still, I mean, it's got to be really positive. I just love the way he plays. So yeah, let's go from what was his first round? I'm trying to
So
think
while
back.
Daniel's calling this up, I'll just mention for the audio listeners, Daniel's doing a masterful job toggling between games, but not going deep on the variations. He's a true pro.
I'm trying. Round one, yeah, he played against Vidic and they had this actually very entertaining short game in a Ninzo. Yeah, very sharp indeed. So that ended in a draw. And then we had this incredible game against Pragnananda in round two, this Catalan, where Prag threw the kitchen sink at him. And brilliant defense. I mean, this Gukesh is so cool. He is quite extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen that in his sort of post-game interviews over the last couple of years. He's only 17, and yet he's just, you know, very diplomatic, very thoughtful, very calm. And that's kind of how normally that's how he plays, apart from the
Yeah.
final minute of his game yesterday, where
Oh,
he
just
cracked.
devastating. Yeah.
Yeah, very tough. However, incredibly impressive. So game against Prague, really nice victory. Then let me see. I haven't got all his games up here. Yeah, he pushed Nepo. He had the two bishops. I thought actually his game against Fabiano was very impressive because he was worse in that Giocopiano and held it very well. Okay, he outplayed Abasov. Again, very gritty. You know, he stuck in there. And yeah, he held Hikaru pretty well. He was a little bit surprised in the opening, but held him well. So everything was going absolutely fine until the game yesterday.
Yeah.
What was your take on this game,
I
Ben?
mean, it was just heartbreaking to watch, just the emotions. It was incredible theater. I mean, because you can sort of feel the meltdown of Faruja at one point in the game, and then you hate to say it, but Gukesh, the pressure got to him as well. So yeah, it was the gamut of emotions, and it was, to me, live chess at its best. I did watch the post-game press conference, and I see Jimmy Cecil mentioning that in chat that Gukesh comes off as so mature, Faruja less so, but Michael pointing out that Faruja was the one who came out on top due to nerves. Something about bullet chess, and this is true in sports too, where you might have a player who is a good jump shooter in basketball, but when they shoot a free throw, they can't get out of their own head. So I think there was something with Faruja just being able to move yesterday when he got in time trouble and to find this queen B3 maneuver mm-hmm. where he was able to think less about the circumstances and just trust his instincts. I'm not sure how much. So I'm not ready to say that he's conquered his nerve issues. I just feel like things worked out for him yesterday. But last thing on Gukesh is I was super impressed with his comportment. You know, I was worried about him as a fan after watching that game and seeing the motions on display after the loss. But by the time he went for the FIDE press conference, he already seemed recovered. He was ready to move on. So,
right. I didn't see the press conference, but that is really impressive. Just very quickly about this game. So Alireza had this very quick kingside attack. And objectively, round about move 20, when he's just ditched the A-pawn, remember, he could just have snapped off the H-pawn with the bishop and made a draw. And objectively, this is the best that white has. This would be the logical outcome of this game. It's just a draw, basically. But this is the point where Alireza thought, okay, great. I'm just going to keep stirring the pot. And after C4, basically black is better. I mean, C4 is pretty random. He's just sort of trying to mix it a little bit. After rook G8, that defends against all the threats on the king side. And then, you know, we got further on. And, you know, round about here, it's quite clear that black is the one that is playing for the advantage. And then it got really random. Gukesh sacked this piece. Yeah, Alireza, as you pointed out, played queen B3 and scraped out. And yes, once it got down to their sort of in their final minute in this endgame, knight against three pawns, then we can see that Alireza is kind of absolutely in his element and just played on instinct. And that is where Gukesh just kind of snapped.
Yeah.
And very, very unfortunate. But basically, this game is another example of Alireza. He's still on tilt.
Mm-hmm.
He could have gone down here very, very easily. So he, although he's bounced up a little bit, he's still all over the place. Because, like I said, if he were kind of stable mind in a stable place, he should just take that draw. You know, well, Nepo would have done that in an instant.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, in the press conference, Faruja said, I have to play risky chess. I have to win all the games, basically.
Okay, but is that how he started? That's not how he started out in the tournament, is it?
No, that's his mindset now, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he kind of added with white. So I think he was realizing in real time, oh, maybe if I draw all my games with black and win all my games with white.
But doesn't that say something? That he's like making it up as he's going along.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And my question is, the other people have kind of announced who's in their team. Do you know who is supporting Firuz Jah in the tournament?
I don't know. I mean, I would think maybe some French players, but I don't know anything definitively.
Because, you know, he needs a Jan Gustafsson in his team. He needs someone who's just going to say, who's you know, maybe a bit of a father figure.
Elder statesman, yeah.
Exactly, who says, just kind of calm down a bit, please.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he has that. They mentioned when he played this h4, rook h3 idea, I believe it was David Howell mentioned that was something that Tabatabai has played, who he's friendly with. So sheer speculation, but that's another possibility of someone.
I don't think this is terrible. I mean, I've sort of played this kind of stuff myself. I really like this pawn structure that you can get from an exchange caro. You know, it's basically a very similar position. And there are, well, I mean, I don't think objectively white is not worse here. And there are other ways to play this attack, actually. In my video yesterday, I was looking at this move, pawn to b4. This is a very interesting move to take away the c5 square, and that kind of limits, although white's pawns on the queen side are pretty ugly, But that pawn move b4 limits Black's counterplay by taking control of the c5 square. And I'm not saying this is a better move than Alireza played, but it's just another try. And I think this whole position is playable for White. But yeah, I mean, right from the start, basically, Alireza has been playing pretty adventurous stuff. If you think about his first round game against Pragnananda, you know, this whole line against the open Spanish where he allowed his f-pawns to be doubled. I mean, I was pretty shocked about that, actually. You know, that is the very first round. And he got away with it, but only just. That was a pretty random encounter.
Yeah. Ed Daly says in chat, Gukesh puts both color pieces back in place after the game. That says all you need to know about his maturity, which is a good
very
point.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, well absolutely. Said. Yeah.
And so I would say we've covered Faruja as well in this discussion, as well as Gukesh. But one final question on Faruja, since we stumbled into him, is I'm thinking there might be a point where he could get targeted the way that Abasov will. Do you think that it could come to that as the tournament goes on?
Certainly, yeah. And if, you know, he's declared his ambition, you know, I've got to play for a win in every game, then... You know, the kind of players that play the Berlin and the Petrov or some kind of solid Spanish or something like that. Or, you know, there are ways you can just say, OK, come on, you know, the guy is leading forward and a quick counterattacking jab is going to get him. Yeah, absolutely. That could happen.
That would be crazy again, because he's so strong, you know, at his best. But yeah,
absolutely. So it could go either way, as we've seen. So it's going to be really entertaining, whatever.
Okay. Well, we got to give Pragnananda his due. Obviously, his opening choices have been entertaining. What else? What would you highlight about his performance so far with 4 points, of course?
Wow. Oh, I'm just so impressed by him and Gukesh, but by Pragnananda as well. Yeah, he had this incredibly solid run, you know, where he was like 47 games without defeat. And if you looked at his tournaments, he was becoming more solid as a player. I mean, we know that he's a really dangerous tactician, a great attacker. But he, over the past year, he's just become more solid, more mature as a player. He's showing different sides to his game where he's understood how to sometimes steer a game towards a draw if suddenly things go a little bit wrong. You know, really good technique. You know, he plays good end games. And now what we're seeing in this tournament is back to the kind of the original Prague, who's playing these really daring openings. I mean, fantastic preparation. So we mentioned Nepo playing the solid Petrov and basically saying, this is my opening. I know it unbelievably well. I've prepared it for 4 years. You can't beat me. And Prague is taking absolutely the other approach, which is the moving target. So in this first round, he played the open Spanish as black against Faruja. Very combative, very dynamic, lots of very interesting positions. Then against Visit, I mean, this one absolutely shocked me. The deferred, not even the Schliemann, deferred Schliemann, which has such a terrible reputation. I mean, really bad. So that was extraordinary. And then we had the French against Fabiano, an opening. I mean, I checked the database this morning, actually, because I was kind of thinking, okay, when was the last time Prague played this? He's never played the French.
Wow, that is crazy.
In a classical game. He's played like a blitz game and a rapid play game or something like that. But he has never played the French in a classical game. So that is deeply impressive. The capacity for hard work that this guy has is something else.
Yeah, it's not an intuitive opening either. I mean, compared to some of the others. So
absolutely not. And he outplayed Fabiano.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
But this one, The deferred Schliemann, that's the one that absolutely got me.
Yeah, Josh says in chat, I think the delayed Schliemann was a bad opening choice. Just because it worked out doesn't mean it was good. yeah, I don't think we'll be seeing it again, that's for sure. And to your point earlier about who's working with Faruja, obviously Prague having Svidler helping him. I mean, you can also see the maturity. I mean, it's a risky approach in sorts, at least in terms of opening choices, but he's playing to win the tournament sort of in a practical matter, and his in-game decision-making is still very mature.
No, definitely. I just think it's fascinating that and same with Gukesh, they show no fear whatsoever. I mean, interestingly, with this deferred Schliemann, actually, it's been a speciality of quite a few Indian players.
Right.
I don't know if they're actually in his team, but it's somehow in the air. You know how different countries often sort of specialize in an opening? It's like, oh, yeah, you hear about it from someone and you start to investigate it. I mean, this is very much the case all over the world. But, you know, if I can think in England, you know, everyone was playing some kind of weird Grand Prix attack.
I was thinking of the Grand Prix, yeah.
Even the big guys.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And then, you know, the more mature players... there was a fashion for basically playing the English, well, it became known as the English attack against all kinds of Sicilians. So in, let's say that against the Nidorf, then, you know, F3, Queen D2, G4, etc. So it became known as the English attack. So John Nunn, Murray Chandler, Nigel Short, you know, these were the main exponents of Michael Adams. I mean, basically everyone played it as white. Something is in the air. So I think that's what happened with this deferred Schliemann. He'd found some new ideas. And boy, oh boy, what a success this was. It really was. However, Vidit did miss that incredible move, knight d5, on move 20. And if Vidit had played that, then it might well have been a completely different story.
Right. Yeah, there's always going to be a few bounces that need to go your way.
Yeah. But really impressive. And I just love Prague's spirit. You know, he's daring. It's just great to see.
Yeah. Well, Kevin in chat says no Kalashnikovs yet to your chessable repertoire, Daniel. But first of all, Fabiano played 3 knight f6 in the Rosalimo. And second of all, both Fabiano and Abasov played knight c6 Sicilians. And, you know, one might guess that they were intending the Shveshnikov, but both of them faced Rosalimo. So we at least have plausible deniability, Kevin, that they were going for the Kalashnikov, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds good to me. yeah. Nice to see you, Kevin. How are you doing? Kevin's an English player.
Nice. Last thing on both Prague and Gukesh, I would say I consider them both more likely to win the tournament than I did going in. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, absolutely. They have a chance. I still think we've seen that they have shortcomings.
Yeah.
That's absolutely clear. However, they definitely have a chance. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and Prague playing Ali Reza next, given the circumstances we've discussed, it's not the worst pairing, you know? You still might catch him before he stabilizes.
Absolutely not. So presumably Prague has white?
Yep.
Yeah, I haven't seen the next round pairing. Yeah,
Naka has white against Caruana, Nepo white against Abasov, Prague white against Faruja, and Vidit white against Gukesh.
I was going to say that sounds like a big round, but they're all big rounds, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not so sure the Hikaru Fabi game. I'm a little worried it still might be a snoozer. Although Hikaru's got to go for it at some point.
Well, should we talk about Hikaru actually? I mean,
Our thoughts on Hikaru Nakamura after the break.
What's your feeling about him so far?
Yeah, it feels like it's not quite enough. It seems like, I mean, he's so pragmatic in certain circumstances, like even when he messed up, as you alluded to in the Nepo game with the bishop takes g3. I mean, he found the bailout pretty quickly and was able to readjust his mindset fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, similar to Fabi, he hasn't shown that extra gear yet, and he's half a point back of Fabi. So it's a bigger concern in a sense. I mean, concern in the sense of like, if you're rooting for him to win.
Yeah, I'm disappointed with him, I have to say. And I think his approach has, I'm going to be strong here. It's been a bit lackluster, actually. So in the first round against Caruana, I think he got away with one, no doubt about it. I think the opening that he chose against Fabiano, this e5 move, this shows you why you've got to play a6 in the Nydorf. When we play 5e5, I mean, this is very old theory, of course. It's a very old line, played, you know, in like 1950s, 1960s. And, you know, Fabiano duly got a slight advantage. Now, Hikaru had prepared this move e4 to open things up, which it means the position is playable for black. However, there is no doubt that, you know, roundabout move 20 when, you know, the queen comes in and starts taking pawns, this is an uncomfortable position for black. So really only two results are possible here. Either Fabiano was going to win that one or it was going to be a draw. Well, fair enough, first round, but still. Against Vidit, second round, I mean, he just misjudged that so badly. Got absolutely smashed in that Spanish. Yeah, I mean, to me, that was showed he was a bit ring rusty, actually, this game.
Yeah.
Then we had a solid draw against Abasov, but that kind of surprised me. I would have thought that, you know, frankly, Hikaru is in a different league to Abasov. So I was just really surprised that he allowed this Slav exchange. You know, Hikaru's got 29 different openings that he has up his sleeve where he could try to
bring back the King's Indian.
Well, listen, not such a crazy idea. The guy, Hikaru, knows it backwards. So for me, that was really surprised. I think, you know, he had to target Abasov. And then with the next round, he played Pragnananda with white. And he basically, after 20-odd moves, repeated the position. So in playing white, I mean, he got absolutely nothing. And then, we had the classic knacker where he succeeded in hustling Firuzja, of course it was, in this end game. Yeah. And, you know, well played knacker. For me, that is the classic knacker. He dug into this position, you know, sound opening, solid opening, but they got quite an interesting position. He hung in there strategically, you know, positionally, he really understands his stuff. And when it came to the crunch, he found that little bit of extra and took the game. So I think that's classic, you know, absolutely brilliant. So why can't we have a bit more of that from him?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, and time's starting to run short. Yeah, that was quite a swindle, as Jimmy is saying in chat. And yeah, Firuzja's time management, Vidit's as well. They both leave something to be desired, to say the least. And with Firuzja, it's particularly confounding because he's such an amazing blitz and bullet player. Although obviously it worked out for him yesterday, as we mentioned earlier.
So I'm going to be really picky here. Excuse me, Jimmy. I don't mean to kind of be disagreeable, but I wouldn't call it a swindle. For me, that was Naka just outplaying his opponent really, really well, actually. You know, really solid game by Naka.
Yeah, he reached a point where, like, he, you know, as the cliche goes, he put himself in a situation to get lucky. Because by the end game, as those watching can see on screen, he was the one who is one bad move away from winning.
Exactly.
Whereas earlier, however, it had been the opposite.
So I'm saying Hikaru's play has been a bit lackluster. However, he's on 50%.
Yeah.
And he puts a run of wins together and suddenly he's in contention again.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't rule him out.
Yeah, obviously not a knock on his talent. And I recently mentioned Vidit, so he's had an interesting tournament. What would you say about
You're not kidding. I mean, I think people have been targeting him. And that's maybe why we've got, you know, all these decisive results. But he's shown that, you know, absolutely deserves to be there. I mean, this fantastic win against Nakamura, that was a very nice bit of preparation, which worked to an absolute T with this lovely move, bishop takes h3, with this very surprising follow-up, queen b8, didn't happen, but a beautiful tactic. So, and he put that game away absolutely wonderfully. Then let me see. He lost that bad game against Prague.
Yeah.
He got targeted. You know, Prague obviously thought, okay, I can beat the old guy. Well, I'm sure Prague is not that disrespectful as I've just portrayed.
And of course, yesterday was a big opportunity. I mean, he had Abasov on the ropes, and you kind of need to bring that one home, you know?
I agree. That was a big chance. And I think that just shows that he's good and he has his moments, but I don't think he's got quite enough, because I think other players would have put that one away.
Yeah. And of course, great guy. I would love to see him win, but
really, really nice guy. And, you know, I'm glad he's there, and he's, well, let's see. He might surprise us. You know, he's capable of absolutely superb chess. I just feel, you know, and his preparation on the whole has been pretty good. But somehow, I don't know, he hasn't got that kind of tactical agility that maybe, you know, Prague has.
Yeah.
That's my feeling. But I agree. Very nice guy, and I'd love to be proof wrong.
Yeah. And last but not least, and then we will discuss the women's section for a bit, Abasov with 2 points. So, it's about as expected, I would say. What do you think, Daniel?
I guess so. I'm a little bit disappointed that he's not really going for it. Because, you know, if we saw in his first game against Nepo, let me see, where is it? I had it a moment ago, and now it's disappeared. Oh, there it is. Yeah, I mean, he played this solid Queen's Gambit with whites, and the pieces duly were hoovered from the board. And you know, we've had a few games like that where he's sort of managed to make a draw. You know, he clung on to draw against Ali Reza, but he's not burning any bridges. He's playing solidly, and you know, I wish he would kind of go for it. He certainly doesn't have the same self-confidence as Prague, but I mean, maybe if he did go for it, he might be absolutely chopped to bits. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder.
It's just a pity he's sort of playing a bit fearfully.
Yeah, I wonder if, as it goes on, if he'll start to take more chances. I mean,
maybe he'll also be tired. Yeah.
It's
also
he's
really
already.
Sorry, Ben.
Oh, so it's okay. I was just saying he's already cracked late in games a couple times. And like speaking of fatigue.
The other thing I was going to mention is he has this ACL injury.
Oh, really?
Did you see his leg is kind of strapped up?
Oh, geez, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I mean, apparently, you know, he was playing football and, yeah, it's got this anterior cruciate ligament injury.
Brutal. That's no fun.
For those that don't know what an ACL is. Yeah, which is really a really tough one. So he's not in a great way, and I feel really sorry for him, because that just makes it extra difficult.
Yeah. Well, big picture, I wouldn't say that he's embarrassing himself. You know,
it's no, not at all.
Just a tough tournament.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on the Open before we touch on the women's section, Daniel?
Nepo is looking good.
Yeah.
That's just the final one. I just want to, I tell you, my final thought is this, that I just went back and checked the winning scores in the candidates tournaments since 2013. So 2013, the winning score was 8.5. 2014, 8.5. 2016, 8.5. 2018, 9. 2020, 21, 8.5. Last time in 2022, Nepo won it with 9.5. But basically, 4 out of those 6 candidates tournaments in the past 10 years have been won with 8.5 points. That's +3. Nepo is not far off that.
Yeah.
So it's quite clear that this is going to be really tight. And actually, I don't think we can expect a score of more than 9 points.
I don't
it
either.
Could be 8.5 or 9 that actually wins this tournament. But okay.
Yeah.
Prepare for that prediction to go. Or be wrong.
To our discussion earlier, if he does win round 8 against Abasov, then all he would need to do is draw out to get to 8.5. Although 9, you can certainly, like, you know, 9's a lot better than 8.5. So I don't think he'll go on cruise control yet, but it does show what a good position he's in.
Yeah, but it just shows how cutthroat these tournaments are, and that actually 8.5 is kind of the standard winning score.
Yeah, for sure. So first question in the women's section, I had it here. Jay Semmels in chat was asking, that's the wrong question. Oh, Neil Irving was asking, do you think that having the women's candidate tournament at the same time at the Open is working out as a good thing?
I think it's great. No, I really like it. Why not? As long as, you know, everyone there is happy with it. I'm all for it. And I'm really enjoying following that as well. And there's been some really interesting games.
Yeah, there have been some fiery chess. And I like that they sort of, I mean, I don't know why they did different time controls, but I like that they're hitting time trouble at different moments at least.
To me, that makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
But anyway, well, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So standings wise, we've got Tan Zhong Yi, of course, leading the field. I lost my standings.
And then Alexandra Goryachkina.
Yeah, Goryachkina with 4.5, and then Lagno, then working from memory here because I can't find the standings.
Right. But, basically Goryachkina was my tip, my clear favorite before the tournament started. So Tan Zhong Yi's a little bit of a surprise to me. I have to say, her game against Anna Muzychuk, I don't know if you saw this
call. Oh, it was nuts. Yeah, I watched Svetlana's recap. Yeah, that was insane.
Okay, this is just a brilliant game.
Yeah.
And, you know, if anyone is kind of interested in that, then do check out that recap. So Svetlana Demchenko, who's part of the Canadian women's team, is doing recaps on my Power Play Chess channel. And she did a really good job of explaining that game, and it's just a brilliant attacking game.
Yeah, and there've been a few. So we will see. I mean, to me, it's the top four who are still in contention. I'm a big fan of Anna Muzychuk. I hate to see her having a tough tournament.
Yeah. I mean, she's a really exciting attacking player as well.
Yeah.
I would like to see her do well. I think Goryachkina, she's such a classy player. You know, her technique is superb. So for me, she is still the favorite, actually, in spite of Tan Zhong Yi being 0.5 point ahead. But we'll see. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, Michael in chat saying, I can't believe Tan is in first. She's not at all one of the players I expected to be in the top half before. I wouldn't go that far, but I'm surprised for sure. And I finally called up the standings to see. Oh, the other person in contention is Lei Ting-Jie with 4 points. Nice win yesterday.
Yeah.
And I'm a little disappointed. I was hoping Vaishali would show more. I mean, it's understandable. Her first.
She was my outside bet.
Yeah.
But she's obviously finding it tough. Yeah.
Yeah. And for the next round's pairings, we have Alexandra with black against Lagno. That's a big game. Salamova, who's done decently, with white against Muzychuk. Tan Zhong Yi with white against Lei Ting-Jie, obviously a big game. And Humpy Kinnaru against Vaishali. Humpy has white, obviously not as big a game in terms of the standings. But there have been some really fun games and fighting chess. I do tend to agree with you, though, that Goryachkina is still still in my mind the most likely winner.
Well, let's see.
After the break, final thoughts and listener Q&A with Grandmaster Daniel King. We'll be right back.
Good.
Yeah, so this has been fun, Daniel. If chat, if you guys have any last questions, feel free to drop them in. I'll also review to see if there's any that I missed. But while I do that, Daniel, what are you working on? Any Chessable courses in the works or books? What else do you have going on?
Well, I've, as ever, lots going on. I've just sent off the manuscript for my book version of my Anti-Sicilians for Black.
Oh, good.
So that's actually been a kind of a big weight off my shoulders, actually. So I've sent that off to New and Chess, and that'll be coming out, well, I don't know. They haven't got back to me, but I guess early summer. So that's the book version. It's kind of Anti-Sicilians for Black 2.0. So it's based on the Chessable course, but I've included lots of suggestions that people have made on Chessable and put them in the book. I've added a couple of new chapters. So I think it's a little bit of an improvement on the Chessable course, although I'm still very happy with the Chessable course.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, as I mentioned, when I interviewed you around when it came out, I picked up the course and I've even played. As we discussed at that time, me adopting the Kalashnikov as a not Sveshnikov surprise. I actually went for I'll reveal it here, the Hyper Accelerated Dragon instead, which I was surprised to see Hikaru play, by the way, in this tournament. Got to give him credit for trotting that one out. But Daniel, I did, when I play the Sveshnikov, I did pick up, as I mentioned, your 3 Knight F6. Against the Rosalimo, and now Fabiano's copying us. But yeah, it's great work. Ted is asking where you learned to speak German. I know you've covered this at least in our interview, and I'm sure elsewhere, but you could answer briefly if you want as we say goodbye, Daniel.
Sure. I played in the German National League, the German Bundesliga, for a few years, and I picked up German then. That's how I speak German.
Excellent. Have I ever had Sasanko on my podcast, Kevin? Yes, I have. I got to interview him once, and I'm hoping to do it again. I've got to pick up the ball. I'd read, 80% of his works anyway, but I actually read the whole Essential Sasanko getting ready to interview him, and now I just need to reach out and make it happen. But speaking of, I don't know if you consider Sasanko Dutch, Kevin, but I kind of do. And speaking of Dutch legends, for my next bonus pod, I will be calling Jan Timmen. Excited to hear his thoughts. Although that one, we won't be live streaming. That one, I'll be calling him on the phone.
Okay, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
I'll note that one.
Oh, and Jay Samo, let's hit this question because he's asked it twice. He's worried about collusion later in the tournament amongst compatriots. Do you think that's an issue, Daniel?
I don't think it is, actually. But then again, I'm not one for conspiracy theories. So I tend to go with the cock-up theory of history rather than conspiracy theory. Do you know what? There will always be this kind of suspicion. You can't rule it out. But actually, knowing the players, I just don't think it's going to happen. Do you know what? We've kind of moved on from the Soviet Union against Fischer, you know?
Yeah, strong agree. And especially as you examine the individual relationships, I mean, Caruana and Naka, Naka actually discussed it in an interview with Mike Klein during this candidates and said, and obviously because he's been on C-Squared and stuff, it's obvious that their relationship is decent these days, but they're not going out of their way to help each other for the most part. And with the Indian players, I mean, with the exception of Vidit, obviously Gukesh and Prague, even though they're really good friends, but they're both so up and coming that they wouldn't do something to destroy their careers. And Vidit's all class. You don't have to worry about it from his perspective either. So yeah, I think Daniel hit the nail on the head. Those days, thankfully, are over. It's the of all the cheating concerns, that's the least one to worry about.
Yeah, definitely. I think from the outside, I think it's very hard for people to appreciate that within countries there is enormous rivalry. You know, they might have an Indian flag next to their name, but basically they're playing as individuals. I think this is the important thing to remember.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at something like someone in chat mentioned earlier, all the support that Prague is getting, someone like Vidit would love to have that level of support. So I'm sure that they're friendly, but just because they're from the same country doesn't mean that they're ready to throw themselves out of the way for their compatriots.
Pedone Rosso says, what nationality are chess engines?
That's a good question.
Yeah, there you are. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, Daniel, this has been a lot of fun. And thank you to everyone who tuned in. I know that these up-and-coming chess personalities, Anish Giri and Levy Rosman, are also doing a stream now. So really appreciate you guys checking us out. And I will be watching the replay of that as well, because I don't know about you guys, but I love this candidates and I can't get enough coverage. So, but thank you, Daniel. Great, as always, to catch up.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was good fun. And well, it's going to be a great second half, basically.
Yeah, can't wait. Should be very entertaining.
Sports Social Podcast Network.